Okay, The Last Picture Show. Wasn't that a movie? I always think of these things, the expression, the last. We are at the last of the, well, we're coming to the end of the line. Now, the book, The Last Harvest, you've heard about on this program for quite some time now, and it's on the homepage. One of the most provocative books of our times. It is there. You really need to take a look at it. It's very important. And it is full of I'm fascinated every time we talk about the book because it seems to have been so prescient in so many different areas. And the publisher of the book is back with us tonight, Damien Dumar. And Mr. Dumar was just in Las Vegas. And I have a little story about that as well. I want to talk to him and find out. Last time he was on, you all remember he was getting ready and preparing to go to a big UFO event in Las Vegas. So welcome back, Damien. How was it in a word or two?
Thank you for having
You're
me.
You're welcome.
Well, I think it was a very successful event. One of my goals when I was over there was to attract the attention of the Ancient Aliens panel on the History Channel. And my presentation was sold out, had a big line for it, and one of the individuals in the audience was part of the Ancient Aliens production crew, and so he was very pleased with my presentation, and it's in the works now that I'm going to be featured in the next season of Ancient Aliens on the History Channel.
Wow.
So that's very exciting. My presentation was only 90 minutes when I was in Vegas, but afterwards I ended up speaking about 10 hours a day straight every day because
at the booth, you mean, or at your table?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Sure.
Because like I have mentioned on programs before, the percentage of people in the general population who have Rh-negative blood and are therefore potentially hybridizable is maybe 15%, but at an event like this, it is 60% or higher because these individuals go to these specific events looking for answers, and my presentation was actually titled Rh-negative blood and abductions and the end times and how are all these topics related. So every Rh negative individual at the event, everyone who was an experiencer who had been abducted and hybridized, they're like, that's the seminar I want to attend. So
it had an
incredible turnout. I met so many people who had Rh-negative blood, who'd been abducted, hybridized, who'd been involved in all sorts of drama that would be normally in the domain of a conspiracy theory. And it's very interesting to interact with all of these people. So the response was incredibly positive. And I think that many people were very happy to learn that they're living in a space opera, and they just didn't realize it.
There was actually a science fiction book called Space Opera, and it had to do with a group of people who went around the galaxy putting on operas for various races and species who had never heard music before. I remember that book, Space Opera. So when you say space opera, you got me with that one. Go ahead.
Well, space opera now is kind of a genre to describe many types of shows, such as Star Trek or Farscape. And the universal premise is always that there's a group of ragtag individuals who are on a spacecraft traveling around, and that becomes the vehicle by which the plot moves forward. So I know that Earth can be considered to be a type of a spaceship, and it's certainly a ragtag bunch of individuals on this planet by any stretch of the imagination. I think we qualify as a space opera as well. And it was also very interesting because, like is the case in most UFO conventions, there is this incredible love for the grays. And everyone is always talking about the grays and channeling their spirit guides who happen to be grays. And the reality, of course, is that the grays are your enemies and they hate you. But one of the interesting things about gray aliens is that they're perfectly capable of inducing all kinds of psychic and orgasmic states in a human being, so they can easily approach you and fill you with...
At distance, like in 6 feet away, well, they can energize you in that regard. Okay.
And so you know, a lot of people, they will channel grays and they will have this feeling of love and maybe they even get some form of orgasmic response. And so it's a way, it's natural that a lot of naive human beings would say, oh, I guess the grays are all about love and light, but it's just a predatory function that the grays have. And then they will steer you into directions that you shouldn't be in. So
it's like baiting a hook. I get it.
Right, exactly. So there were all these events being held out in the desert and group meditations and prayers. And the idea behind it was that this area, it was held at the Luxor, is very close to where that shooting occurred. Where someone was allegedly firing outside of one of the Mandalay Bay.
That's a load of garbage. By the way, there were shooters on the fourth or fifth outside tier of that escalating pyramidal shape, shooting from there. There were shooters all over the place. This was a very well-planned massacre of human beings. So, yeah.
And this was... exactly where this event was held. And this event was held there specifically because, as I heard, the promoter's guides, who are grays, were telling him that this is a chance to take back this very dark place and to reclaim it for the light. And of course, this is a trap, and it's very dangerous because many RH negative individuals who have psychic abilities of sorts were coming to me and saying, I see all these beings around here feeding on all of this freely given energy. And I said, well, is that really a shock to you? The grays are not your friend. And there's this common theme of grays, and they're all about love and light, and nothing could be further from the truth. And I think that this is a big problem in UFO culture.
I think so. Well, go back to Spielberg. He's the guy who set this whole thing up, basically, even though it wasn't the little being he had in his movie. Was not exactly a textbook cookie-cutter gray, but it was close. So, yeah, cute. Everybody wants to have a gray as a friend or a pet, all right? That's kind of one of the things that I've seen for
like
years.
Like in the TV show American Dad, where he has a gray alien as a sort of pet living in his house.
I didn't know that. I didn't see that one, but yeah, I'm not surprised.
It's a very popular show on television right now. And I think going back in the day, what you're referring to is the film E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Yes.
And around the same time was also a film called Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
And those two films sort of really promoted this idea of gray love.
It's true. That imprinted on this culture like a few other movies have, those two. They were very powerful statements. Right or wrong, in the minds of the producers, they didn't care. They were just trying to make movies, I guess. But, yeah, this is interesting. It's hard for people to understand that, first of all, two types of grays. You got the tall grays, which appear to be the seniors among the species. And then you have the shorter ones, which are more the servant class, apparently. I'm not sure if that's contemporary wisdom, in quotes, or not. How does it look to you?
Well, I would not... I know that a lot of people like to vote for presidents based on their height, but when it comes to the grays, it doesn't really matter what the height is there. There are many different types. It's just height-based, but none of them are your friends. They're all a big problem for humanity.
We know the planet is in the hands of evil now, and we know that we're being visited. Perhaps the planet's been cohabited for a long, long time by a number of different off-planet, originally, species. But they're here, And we're clearly not we're clearly not in good hands, right? We're clearly we're in trouble, all right, as a species. That's a fact. And I don't have an easy fix for it. I wish I did, but I don't. But I do know that people they don't have a handle on this gray thing. And if there's a sitcom now with that and a cute little gray, they're promulgating the image since E.T. the extraterrestrial and before that. So, yeah, they're pushing it. Interesting.
Yeah, they're pushing it very hard. And I think also it's important to, when we look at, well, there's no easy solution. That's correct. There is no easy solution. And that's one of the myriad of reasons why The Last Harvest was written. And this conversation came up over and over about what can we do about it. And I always say, well, pray, and I don't mean this in a Christian sense or a normal religious sense, but just the idea there's really nothing out there that prevents anyone from communicating directly with the Creator. And one point I kept mentioning to people is that, listen, a gray alien may live for 20,000 years, but you as a human being, your lives were purposely truncated to around 100 years so that you could never really acquire wisdom or advance as a species. And when you live for 100 years at best, and the first 20 years of your life is spent just trying to, quote unquote, grow up, and then by the time you're 50, 60, you're already a little bit too tired to put the wisdom you did acquire into play, human life is really so short that there's no need to be so afraid if you read a book such as The Last Harvest that points out that the elite want to exterminate 90% of the population. There's no reason to freak out and say, oh my gosh, they're going to kill us, because even if the events in The Last Harvest were not unfolding, you would be dying soon enough anyway. So doesn't it behoove any quote-unquote human being to be looking to their future in either case? There's nothing really necessarily special about the end of the world, the apocalypse or Armageddon, because everyone's life is so short to begin with.
It's true. And when you're young and learning and seeing things for the first time and the process of growing up, the year seems like an eternity. And then when you get older, in your 30s and 40s, you begin, it kind of just ticks off in a routine fashion. That's a year. And then when you get over 50, so many people have told me this, a year seems like, 6 months. Just goes.
Yeah, that's totally how it works. So it's just an illusion of time to a certain degree. Because when you're very young, as you pointed out, you have the idea you may live forever, even though you very well know that you're not going to be living forever.
But that's how they get people into the military. They have imbued in them some kind of a feeling of immortality. It's not going to happen to me. It'll happen to somebody else. And anyway, it's. Let me ask you this. Did anybody come up to you and bend your ear when you were there who has heard our conversations here? I'm curious about that.
Yes, actually, there was one listener by the name of Mark Allard, and he showed up, and we spent a lot of time chatting, and he was a very interesting individual, and we had a good time, and he has a lot of stories to tell as well. And so we connected, and he was actually one of the first people who found me and came over to my booth and mentioned that he was a listener on the Rents show, and we spent a lot of time talking. So I'm sure there were others. There were others there, but they just declined themselves.
No, they wouldn't message that necessarily. But there are a lot of listeners in Las Vegas. That's why I mentioned that. A lot of them.
Vegas is a nest.
Yeah. Program used to be carried by one of the big stations there, and so we did have a really wonderful group of people there. Go ahead.
What shocked me a little bit about Vegas is I had not been there since prior to the pandemic, and the energy of the place was very different, and a lot of it seemed very run down and neglected. And
tell
I was a little bit
Well, this is
surprised.
Interesting. First of all, let's take the run down and neglected. Are you talking about the physicality of the city?
Yes, everything, from the physicality of it to the condition of many stores, even little details like the glass windows of the Luxor Pyramid Hotel were absolutely filthy. And the inside of many of these casinos was understaffed and neglected and falling apart. And I spoke to certain cab drivers about it who lived there, and they had explained to me that a lot of those who ran these hotels and casinos, that they were mismanaging a lot of the bailout money that they got and allowing the place to fall apart, and they didn't want to hire anyone or spend the money. And
you're being kind. Mismanaged? Hell, they stole it. A lot of it. There's no excuse for that. You're judged by your appearance. Come on, Las Vegas. That's not okay. That's not okay. A lot of these hotels used to be run by people, I think, that were less international conglomerates and more small groups of people who knew each other. I'm not talking necessarily about Hughes, but they were. It's a whole different paradigm now. And when you say the energy's changed, how would you describe the energy there? Because I used to work there. I worked there for 3 years. I'm just curious. What do you sense there?
I would describe it in some ways as depressing, but I know that might not be the best word for it. It's more as if the place has a darker but neglected energy that's not very vibrant at all. And very, very dirty. Very dirty everywhere.
Wow.
And I was surprised.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, nor the Vegas that I remember. But like I said, I haven't been there since the pandemic, and I'm sure that Vegas suffered a lot under that pandemic and probably didn't recover, as many places went through the same experience.
Fair enough. Yeah. Now, I remember clean, shiny, certainly substance over form is not the game they play. They're all about form, and substance comes in second. But it was certainly a terrific form. I mean, they had it all. Squeaky clean, really nice buildings, constantly upgrading. And now that it seems like it's just kind of been pulled down by this whole horror that we've been through for the last 3 years. I guess that's to be expected.
Very much so. Very much so.
All right. Let's look at this country as we are now in the holiday season. How would the last harvest addressed Christian holiday traditions, season, values, and morals? And today, just for the sake of repetition, I guess, but I'll tell you again, all of you listening, the Russian Supreme Court today banned the international LGBTQ movement and said, this is an immoral organization. We don't want anything to do with it. We're banning it. So they banned it. Now, that's a very high moral road to take in the view of many people. I'm not saying that's necessarily how I feel, but that's what they've done over there. This is a very big indicator that the world is no longer playing and marching to the same drummer. That's diametrically opposed to the woke West.
Well, I think that one of the very important news stories that came out in the last week or so was that New York State Governor Kathy Hochul, she was involved in a particular landmark case of government overreach called Rule 2.13, isolation and quarantine procedures. And the New York Appellate Division ruled in favor of this. And what Rule 213 does is it gives the state of New York the ability to come to your home and take you away to quarantine without any notice and for any virus or infection they deem necessary. Furthermore, they do not provide any option to fight it. No court date, nothing. The rule has no age limit, and they can keep you as long as they'd like. And as if that wasn't enough, the rule also allows them to treat you as they see fit, including using methods that are still in testing. And I think this is not
That's
only...
That's important. Would you repeat that, Damien? Just repeat that. The new law allows them to treat you any way they see fit. Understand what that means. You're going to get shot up.
Yeah, they can test anything on you. And what this really is saying is that it gives them the ability to force vaccinations onto people.
So that was my point. Exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I totally got your point on that. And that this was upheld by the New York Appellate Division, and no one seems to have much of a problem with this.
You're talking about the appellate court?
Yes.
Okay.
The New York Appellate Court Division, they
gotcha.
Ruled in favor of this. So this law is now on the books, and of course it's nerve-wracking because it makes one think, well, what happens the next time there is some sort of health crisis? And then
exactly.
The other aspect of this so disturbing is that we always have to look at what New York is doing, because as The Last Harvest points out, New York is the Empire State, and it's called that because it is the headquarters of the Grays. So whatever the Grays wish to apply across the United States and the planet, we see it first coming into fruition in New York.
Oh, interesting. All right. Let's pause on that. I could take a little break. We'll come right back with Damien Dumas, and I want to talk more about this New York decision because, yeah, it was upheld at the appellate level. This is very, very concerning, and yet there was no outrage beyond the first day of the press release about it. I didn't see anything. There should be massive demonstrations in that state right now. And I don't see it. I don't see it. Hold on, we'll be right back with Damien. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Damien. And if you have any issues at all about The Last Harvest, don't hesitate. Get the book, and by all means, read it. It's that once in a lifetime book that you don't forget. You can't. It's one of a kind. And so good. How are sales going, by the way? I've never asked you that.
They're going really great, and I keep growing my social media presence and the traffic that is going to the various pages promoting The Last Harvest is very large, and the book just continues to take off. I'm actually have a video of my 90-minute presentation from the Vegas UFO convention, and I am in the process of cleaning it up a little bit from a audio point of view, and then I will be uploading it onto various social media outlets so that people can really get a much deeper understanding of parts of the book that I don't normally talk about in podcasts. For example, I go into great detail about all the different extraterrestrial species, where they come from, how they relate to each other. I go into the history of the intergalactic conflicts that led to the colonization of this planet. And I have flowcharts that I created to help create a structure so that people can very easily learn and retain this information, because I think it's very important that they have this knowledge when looking at other sources of information, because other sources of information out there often are the same recycled information that's not accurate. So I'm going to be uploading that and give people a different view of other aspects of The Last Harvest that I'm normally not talking about.
Very good. Some people have asked me, will there be a sequel?
As far as I know, there won't be, but one never knows what the future may bring, I could say.
Well said.
I do not see one as happening, but you never know.
Understood. No, well said. Okay, let me go back to the event itself. You said something that's very important for all of us who look at the internet for information, news, and so forth. Recycled, incorrect material. That's really summed up perfectly. That is the biggest vice of the alt news community that you're going to find. People parroting other people who are wrong or who are working on an agenda-based dialogue and delivery. They'll pick up their stuff. They'll run with it. Everyone is always looking for something that's hot and new. And a lot of it that's hot and new is tainted. It's tired. It's wrong on its basis. And yet it won't stop them from picking it up. Everyone's talking about it and so forth. So we've never needed discernment more than we do now. Discernment. You've got to be able to understand and look at the bigger picture. And I'm not sure if you noticed that in the crowd. What kind of people did you encounter there? Overall, what was the sense of the people there that you had?
Well,
you're very perceptive.
Thank you. My sense of the people was that the majority of them were, as I have pointed out earlier, Rh negative. They had been abducted. They had hybridization occur to them, and they were out looking for answers, which is only natural for anyone who has been in that situation. They want to know what happened, and the problem is they're just confronted with this, oh, the grays are love and light, and they will say, well, this has not necessarily been my experience. So that information is not helping them. And then, of course, you have a certain amount of Freemasons and other occultists who go to these events, and they look to recruit those who have Rh negative blood and to tell them a whole series of lies that serve, again, the purpose of bringing them back into the fold of the grays. So some people may feel that, oh, well, if I join the Freemasons, for example, perhaps then I'll learn more about the truth. But no, you will just be fed another set of lies, because the Freemasons are under the control of the grays. Whether every Freemason knows that or not, that's a different story. But once you get to the 33rd degree, you start to know the truth. But here's the thing. You don't have to be a 33 degree Freemason anymore if you buy and read or listen to the audiobook of The Last Harvest. The time of secret societies is over.
Well, all right. Well, summed up and presented perfectly. So what we have now is an age where abductees are really no longer in the news. You don't hear about it much. I don't even have any guests I can bring on that I know right now who are legitimate, or in my estimation, certainly worthy to consider as being legitimate abductees. Dr. David Jacobs, in his book, The Threat, came to the determination, and I've said this many times, maybe not to you, but the abductors, had reached their zenith. They were the job had been done, in other words. They weren't going to be abducting many people anymore. Whatever it is that they were doing has been achieved, accomplished. And so the abductions, according to everything I see, have pretty well followed Dr. David Jacobs' statements, that they have done what they wanted to do, and they're on to the next stage. What that is the big question, which is certainly partially addressed at least in The Last Harvest. So
Correct. You
can take that and move right forward. Abductees. Go ahead. You got something to say there. I can hear it.
Well, it's true in the sense that the extraterrestrials who are in charge of this planet are beginning to move into the next phase. And as anyone with a calendar will easily see, 2025 is about 1 year away. And the next phase is, in fact, the depopulation agenda.
Deagle.com. Right.
Right, and we can see the wars beginning to foment everywhere on this planet. For starters, that's just approaching that particular vector of depopulation. And right. It's got to start somehow, and we can clearly see, if we have eyes to see, that it is starting with war.
Oh, well, yes, when things get tough, they take us to war every time. It's a cycle. And now the great purge, the great die-off, the great depopulation will be enhanced, potentially, with a nuclear exchange. I'm not saying full-on. I don't know. There are many ways to think these things out. I do know that AI, which is certainly mentioned in the book, is playing an enormously important role already, important for the controllers. They're using AI, and AI is being... it's teaching itself how to get better and learn more quickly. It's constantly in training because it trains itself. It's sentient. Did you follow the Sam Altman thing at all?
I'm not familiar with Sam Altman.
Oh, Sam Altman is the OpenAI chief economic officer, CEO, and they fired Sam Altman a week and a half ago now, I guess, maybe 2 weeks. And what happened, apparently, is that artificial general intelligence, the next step after AI, which is the ability to reason things out and come to a resolution and a solution, not just go through algorithmically and look at, everything that's ever been printed and come up with the right answer, but cognitive thinking. Reasoning. That's artificial general intelligence. It is thought that Sam Altman and OpenAI and his researchers have achieved an AGI, artificial general intelligence, breakthrough. And they said that what they were able to do was now have, this is inside information, it's not been confirmed directly by Altman, but by inference it has, that they have now the ability to have a mathematical problem solved by reasoning rather than just formulaic, all right, tools. It's using reasoning, thinking, rationale, sentience. So that may be what they call, what do you call it? The Q flower. Q flower. I think that's what it is. Anyway, this is a big development, and the board of directors, who are not scientists, in I guess most cases, didn't like this because they weren't advised to their satisfaction by Sam Altman, so they fired him. Well, this brought on a stockholders, and the rest of there are hundreds of people threatened to quit, so they had to back off, and he's back as CEO now. The big debate seems to be at OpenAI is to develop it as fast as possible or to pull back and go very, very slowly with it. Because this thing has the potential to be quite a threat to humanity. Not saying it will, but it has that possibility now that apparently AGI has been achieved. That's a very big story. I've been doing a lot of research on this. So anyway, artificial intelligence is the first step, the big step, and it's made an enormous change already. And I think many things are being influenced by it to the extent that it would shock most people at this point. And now AGI is clearly, I think I can safe to say, it's here. It's being developed, and it's training itself. So we'll see. Anyway, it's quite a field, and it's pretty amazing when you think about science fiction and where we are now, and where we were just a couple years ago, before ChatGPT was released. Look at the difference. Anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're correct that artificial intelligence is growing at an incredible rate, and it's growing far faster than any of us really recognizes. And I think that a lot of people, when I speak to them at least about the problem of artificial intelligence, they just look at the labor-saving aspect of it. And they'll say things like, well, I don't need to do any reports at work anymore. I just tell ChatGPT to write my work report, and I change a few things myself and make it my own, and my boss doesn't know the difference. And this sort of laziness is what really allows a lot of things to go unchecked. For example,
that will feed the growth, the explosive growth of AI and now AGI even faster. Human nature is to sit back and let somebody else do the work. And that's, you're right on the money with that. Perfectly said. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that also explains why nobody seems to complain when the New York Appellate Court Division rules in favor of isolation and quarantine procedures, because they just think about, well, what is easiest? And that comes back to the whole topic of free will. Well, if human beings are never really exercising their free will in a direction that would serve their evolution, they can't really be upset when things don't go in a way that they would like ultimately.
You couldn't be more correct. Absolutely correct. This idea of free will and a wonderful opportunity to do things on this planet to the best of your ability and achieve things, it doesn't seem to be as present as it used to be. You don't see it anymore. People are just kind of plodding along, younger people. I'm talking about 40 years old and under. They're just plodding along. They're not doing anything exciting. They're not being proactive about life in many cases. They're just kicking back. And if there's any crisis at all, emotional crisis, intellectual crisis, any crisis, they just pick that phone up and they dive into it and they're gone. Gone. The ultimate escapist tool.
Right, and change is hard work. A lot of people, they
work?
Always talk about, well, seeking the light, and then their idea of seeking the light, for example, is going to a lot of EDM shows or going to Bali with a copy of Eat, Pray, Love under your arm, and that's not seeking the light or making positive change in the world. And anything that requires any kind of change, it takes a lot of work, and I think that that is something that human beings are less and less inclined to do so these days, especially with tools like AI being presented to you as,
exactly,
well, here's a great way to do even less. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, it's all true. I don't see anything really inspiring people to better themselves much anymore. It's all there. They could just pick it up and they're gone. Here's this government thing. This is, I cannot believe, I figured there would be some demonstrations, follow-up news stories about how enraged New Yorkers were and others. They all should be. Everybody should be worried about this. The court in New York, if you missed it, the appellate court has ruled that the state of New York has the right to seize citizens for indefinite quarantine and isolation, an end of due process. That is now the law in New York. That should scare the hell out of everybody who believes in this country and what it used to stand for. This is really bad news, and so bad it's hard to believe. And I think if it just drops out of the headlines, then people will carry on as if nothing's happened.
This also ties into the fact that Governor Hochul also has put aside something like $75 million in order to conduct social media surveillance on an active basis in order to monitor quote-unquote hate speech. And what's interesting about that is that New York is also refusing to comply with the Supreme Court decision that overturned New York's concealed carry laws. And one of the ways in which they refuse to comply is by simply drafting a new law that said that if you want to have a concealed carry permit, you must turn over access to all your social media accounts for the last 5 years or so in order for them to decide whether you're somebody who should be allowed to carry a concealed firearm, which goes completely against what the Supreme Court ruled. And it ties into this idea that they are going to be approving or denying based on your political views, as opposed to whether you're a threat to somebody or not.
No, just people, my God, this is, I don't know. We're obviously headed toward red and blue state fragmentation of this country. It's going to happen. It already is happening. There are movements underway to try to make it happen. But in addition to this quarantine camps, they can just come pick you up. Understand, all of you listening in New York right now, I hope you're on top of this and trying to do something. I don't know what's being organized back there, but this is crazy. It needs to go to the Supreme Court, I think, because on its very merits, it's unconstitutional in many different ways. They also want to make sure your kids learn only state-approved truth. Can you spell communism? And not any crazy conspiracies. So they're going to tell you what you're supposed to learn, how you're supposed to learn it, and add to this, Damien, this is really interesting. The State of New Jersey Teachers Union has now dropped all requirements for aptitude and proficiency for teachers in the state. They do not have to be able to do math, reading, writing, nothing. It's now wide open because it's discriminatory, so they say, against the less fortunate or the less intellectually endowed. It's crazy what's going on.
From the point of view of the elite, it doesn't really matter if people are educated or not, if you're going to kill them off or if you're going to stick them into FEMA camps. And what better way to get people used to the idea of going to a FEMA camp than to say that it is for the public health and welfare?
Here's a little... a news clip here. I just wanted to play a little bit of it. This came out of the New York Appellate Court decision. Let's see what it says. I have not listened to this. Okay.
Hochul's plans for quarantine camps may be in the works again. An appeals court just dismissed a lawsuit from lawmakers and citizen groups. Their attorney, Bobby Ann Cox, disagrees with the decision. We spoke earlier today. Bobby Ann Cox, welcome to our show. Thank you so much for joining us. To begin with, can you please explain the judge's ruling in this case and your initial response here?
Yes, well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. So what happened was the Fourth Department Appellate Division here in New York State ruled that my plaintiffs, Senator George Borrello, Assemblyman Chris Taig, Congressman Mike Lawler, and a citizens group called Uniting New York State, didn't have standing to bring the lawsuit last year, which, if you recall, we actually won the lawsuit last year at the trial court level when the court ruled in our favor and said that this regulation that Governor Hochul and her Department of Health made it was an unconstitutional regulation on multiple levels. So now this appellate court, which, you know, of course, the governor and the attorney general appealed to this court, they tried to overturn our decision. And yeah, the court came down and said, well, you know what? We're not even going to talk about the merits here, whether or not this regulation was unconstitutional or not. We're just going to say, hey, you know what? We don't think you had the right to bring the lawsuit in the first place last.
So there you go. No standing. That's how they do it. And I can hardly believe that this has happened, Damien. I really mean that. It's that crazy.
It is really shocking. It's really shocking, but I'll tell you, Jeff, it's not shocking to those who read The Last Harvest. It is completely expected because The Last Harvest goes into such great detail about quarantine and camps and internment facilities, and it goes into depth that nobody has ever seen before. I mean, I can go on Amazon right now and literally buy the manual published by the Department of Defense that tells exactly how these camps will be run on Amazon. It's not published by Penguin or Random House or the Conspiracy Press. It literally says DOD as publisher. And that is pretty scary. And I know that listeners of the Rents show are very interested in all kinds of topics about pandemics and vaccines, and The Last Harvest really goes into such great detail about all aspects of viral vectors and cattle mutilations and mad cow and all the various strains of HIV. So if someone really wishes to get a great education on all these pandemic-related issues, The Last Harvest is definitely the book for them.
I agree. Did you take a whole bunch of books in to the venue with you when you were there? You must have, at the table.
Well, what I did actually was I printed up a series of USB business cards that look like business cards, with the cover of them being The Last Harvest book cover. And then on the back is my contact information and a flip-out 1 gigabyte USB drive that contains a digital copy of the book as well as an audio copy of the book. And I handed them out for free to anyone who wanted them. So, yes, I know the book is for sale on Amazon, but for those who attended this event, they all got copies for free.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that technology existed. I should have guessed, but it's...
Many people were impressed with it. I had other book authors and publishers come to me and say, oh, will you do this for my book as well? Where did you get this done? But I'm very crafty and resourceful.
You know, that's a winner. That's very smart. Great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe you'll share that with me sometime privately. I'd like to
know.
Sure. Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Damien, great to speak with you. Thanks for sharing all that. It was very enlightening. And we'll talk to you again next month, end of the year.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Damien Dumas and The Last Harvest. You find the banner right on the homepage there. That's fascinating. He was able to do that like a business card. Wow. All right, hold on, and we shall continue.